Ring the bell. Golden Oak Lending has lowered rates. Lower your mortgage payment, get cash out, or pay off credit cards. Visit goldenoaklending.com today.
Golden Oak Lending, cured my blues.
NMLS 114937.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At T-Mobile, we'll give you four free 5G phones and four lines for only $25 per line per month with eligible trade-ins. And no, it's not a contest. It's every day for a limited time. Everyone's a winner on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay. Up to $830 off each phone via 24 monthly bill credits plus taxes, fees, and $10 device connection charge. For well qualified customers, contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, so I do want to just touch on a conversation we were just having before the break. So I went and I checked some numbers. I was just curious, what were the Caitlin Clark numbers like in the postseason? Because the Fever did play the Connecticut Sun in the WNBA playoffs. The game two of that, which the Fever lost, they got swept in two games. But game two of that did 2.5 million viewers on ESPN, peaking at 3.4 million viewers, which was the most watched WNBA game on cable in league history.
Well, didn't they have like multiple, you know, record-setting television ratings games with her throughout the season?
Yeah. Basically, every time she played Chicago, so you got a little bit of Caitlin and Angel Reese, but then in the postseason as well. And I checked that game was played on a Wednesday during the NFL season, so it kind of got like right in the sweet spot. You don't have a Monday night game, Sunday night game, or whatever. You're not on Thursday, so that was the day to play that, because their first game was on a Sunday, September 22nd, and you know, no one's watching that because it's football. You're watching Red Zone. You're watching your team or whatever, your fantasy team.
Yeah, we were looking up some of this stuff. Like, if you're interested in this stuff, like, what's the difference between the NBA playoffs and March Madness? Well, they're pretty comparable, basically. The NBA finals draw, you know, remember, it's a best of seven. It's not one game. And the true comp would be a win or go home game, like game seven. Game six draws well, but a game seven. We haven't had a game seven in the NBA finals since the Kyrie Irving shot when Cleveland won the NBA championship in 2016. That game did 31 million viewers in that game seven, but that is such an outlier. And the best, you know, in the last, you know, if you go back to 2015, a year before that, college basketball had 28 million viewers for their Duke-Wisconsin championship game. But here in recent years, you know, if you look at the UConn numbers and you say that last night's going to do something close to that, even though last night was a tightly contested game, let's say last night does 15 million viewers. The NBA Finals last year, Dallas and Boston, averaged around 10.5 million viewers. Now, they only got to a Game 5. So the NBA, if you get to a Game 7, they're going to probably outdraw the NCAA championship game. But if you're going to take the average of a series that only goes 5 or 6, that average probably won't equal the NCAA championship game. So they're very comparable, basically. The NBA needs game sixes and game sevens. We were looking through this, and the highest rated NBA game since that 2016 game was a game six between Toronto and Golden State, the year that Kawhi Leonard and Toronto won the NBA Finals, and it drew 18.34 million viewers. The all-time NBA draw was 1998, Game 6, Bulls-Jazz. See you later, Michael Jordan. He's done. 35.89 million people watched that game. TV's changed. Sports has changed. Lots of things have changed. But MJ packed him in. during that stretch in the 90s. All right, what do you got?
All right, how about the Nationals getting a big win over the Dodgers last night? Shohei Ohtani was a double shy of the cycle. Doesn't matter, though. James Wood had two RBI. Mackenzie Gore got his first win of the season, pitched six innings and struck out seven. So good for the Nationals. That's two in a row.
Yeah, I did read that, I guess, James Wood was pulled in the ninth for defensive purposes, and he missed it at bat.
By the way, it's three in a row for the Nats, not two in a row.
Yeah, it's three in a row. They took the last two against Arizona. Yeah. They've now won three in a row. What was? I'd love to know what the line was last night. What was the money line last night? I mean, I would have to think that the Dodgers are minus 250 against almost anybody they play. And against the Nats, maybe even more so.
No, they were minus 180.
Okay.
Yeah, so close, but you're not going to get, I don't think you're going to get a ton of minus 250s.
This time, yeah.
Especially with Mackenzie Gore on the mound. Yeah.
Oh, that right. Mackenzie Gore was on the mound. Fair enough. If without Gore, it would have been minus 2-something.
Yeah, tonight it's minus 175.
Who pitches tonight?
Brad Lord.
Okay. I haven't been paying attention to baseball lines this time of year. It's typically a fall sport for me. But that's awesome. They've won three in a row after starting so poorly. They're 4-6 after the 1-6 start. Dylan Cruz didn't have a hit last night. I think he still only has one hit. But he did score a run.
Yeah, he scored.
In the game. All right. Good for them. They play the Dodgers again tonight.
And then I think they have an afternoon game on Wednesday to close up that series. So if you want to go watch them play.
Yeah. 4-6. And by the way, the Braves are 1-8 in the NL East.
Good.
Nats just 3.5 out of first.
How's their wild card rating look right now? Is it too early?
Who's really started? The Padres and Dodgers started off very quickly. I know the Phillies are playing very well.
Anybody Texas in the Rangers, American League? 8-3.
The
Texas Rangers are 8-3. Both the Mets and Phillies have seven wins.
Right.
The Cubs 8-5. The Giants 8-2. It's so early to be doing this.
Yeah.
It's way too early.
What else?
All right, we talked about the national championship. Florida gets their third. They beat Houston 65-63 to win the national championship. And Todd Golden becomes the youngest guy since Jimmy Valvano to win a national championship as a head coach in college basketball. That's a pretty nice graphic to be a part of.
He was 39 years old. For whatever reason, I saw a graphic early in the tournament that said he was 43 years old. He looks closer to 39 years old.
He looks closer to 29 years old.
He did a great job. He did a phenomenal job, and what, you know, a story he was this year from the beginning of the season when there were, allegations that he was involved in, like, some sort of stalking situation. Those things, the school did not, suspend him. They investigated, found that the allegations were more likely than not false. Those charges, were dropped. Apparently they were. He stayed on, and Florida had a hell of a year. During the course of this season, whenever we would talk about college basketball, even during football season, we talked, so much about the SEC. And remember that at one point, the rankings were basically like the top three were SEC teams, and like six or seven of the top 10 were SEC teams. But we were all kind of focused more on Auburn and Bama for much of it, or Tennessee, and Florida really got it going later in the season. It's not that they weren't really good early in the season and that they weren't ranked really high early in the season, but they got it going early February, and they essentially won, going in, I think it was 17 of their last 18 games, something like that, 18 of their last 19. They had one blip over the final 2 months of the season, and that was the game against Georgia on the road, in which they lost. Other than that, good job. He did a great job. I thought he, in a game that was, like we talked about last hour, that was so rugged defensively, it was so hard for teams to get anything going offensively. One of the things, when you have a hard time running offense against an opposing defense, you don't want to face that defense. So you try to get the ball up court quickly so you don't have to run half-court offense. And Florida scored that way a couple of times early. But I thought, you know, they ran better half-court sets than Houston did down the stretch. And again, to me, the officiating in this game was one of the wildest, you know, disparities one half to another that I've ever seen, and I thought that was really unfortunate for the teams. Four fouls called in the first half, 26 in the second half. I've never heard of anything like that, and it was in the championship game. That was the unfortunate part about last night, is that the referees decided for some reason we are going to call a completely different game in the second half after establishing, you know, we're going to let them play in the first half. And I thought Florida adjusted better. Houston had a difficult time adjusting because their bigs got into foul trouble and they went with a smaller lineup, which for them was not their best lineup. So it hurt them more. But I thought Todd Golden ultimately did a really, really good job with this team. What do they have coming back?
Who knows? Again when the portal closes. I mean, you and I were looking at some way too early top 25s. And I think generally speaking, way too early top 25s. Like if the year was 2015, I still think they're silly. But in the year of our Lord 2025, where like half of your roster could be leaving literally tomorrow, these things make absolutely no sense. So Houston is the number one team for 2025-26 in the way too early ranking here.
What are they? I missed it. Sorry.
They're number one. Houston is. I'm trying to see if your Terps are on this list.
They're not going to be. And they lost everybody. He's done okay here to start the portal. He's got a whole team to fill out. They don't have anybody right now.
Do you want Hunter Dickinson?
What do you mean, do I want Hunter Dickinson?
Isn't he jumping in the portal?
How can he jump in the portal? He's got eligibility left?
I think he has like one more year of eligibility.
How is that possible?
I have no idea. The COVID thing like does not make any sense to me.
Hasn't he already played 6 years in college basketball?
If he hasn't played six, he's played, it feels like, for forever. But I think I thought I had seen something that said he was jumping in the portal because he had 1 year of eligibility left. He's played 5 years, so I think he gets six. I don't know.
Oh my God, he's only played 5 years. It seems like so much more than that. Do I want him? Yeah.
No.
Why is there? I don't get into I'm not a big recruiting guy. The portal I've been paying more attention to is Dickinson considering Maryland. Is Buzz Williams considering Dickinson?
No, I don't. Not that I've seen. It was just
how much money he's made, like $6 million, right?
Something like that. He had a podcast for a little bit, but boy, that blew up in his face. He wanted to be like the villain of college basketball, and it didn't really work.
Look, they were bad. He had a rough year this year. He had a rough tournament. He's not an NBA player. You know, he's got that situation where he's short-armed. You know, Tyler Hansbrough had some of those issues. I'm not comparing the two players, but I remember the biggest thing that, you know, people said about Tyler Hansbrough coming out, you know, arguably one of the greatest college players ever, that's not Hunter Dickinson, is that he just had super short arms, and that's hard at that position. He's not an NBA player, Hunter Dickinson. He's probably a professional player overseas, but he's a good enough college player. Yeah, I'd want him. Maryland needs players.
Hold on. Period. I'm trying to confirm whether this was real or not. This might not
what, that
real.
He's coming back for another year?
That he has another year. I don't know. I don't know if he does. I hate Twitter. Mm-hmm. I just can't tell who is real and who is not on that thing. I've gotten duped so many times during the NCAA tournament with stupid stuff like that. So that could be an L on me. But he's not going to the NBA. Right. Does he feel kind of similar? This is going to sound maybe a little bit meaner than it's supposed to, but like a Melo Trimble left after his freshman year at Maryland, he probably gets drafted top 20. It felt like Hunter Dickinson had an opportunity to get drafted early first round, and the longer he played, the more of his flaws got exposed.
Yeah, I think that's true. Like with, by the way, there's a lot of players that end up having that. But the difference between Melo Trimble and Hunter Dickinson is that Hunter Dickinson was getting paid to stay. You know, that's unfortunately Melo Trimble, you know, probably lost money. You know, another Maryland player from years ago, I think Terrence Morris, if you remember Terrence Morris, he was just exceptional his junior year. He would have been a top 10 pick, probably a borderline lottery pick, you know, guaranteed big money if he had come out after his junior year. Or no, after his sophomore year. My fault. Sophomore year was the year that he played with Steve Francis. And he didn't. He stayed, and ultimately he had a great international career, very long and prosperous international career. But yeah, you see that all the time. But there's a case to stay now because you're getting paid big money. It's very possible that Hunter Dickinson has made more money staying in college than he would have made during those same years playing professionally.
He is advocating. By the way, he went on a Field of 68, one of your boys over there, and he's advocating for multi-year contracts for the NIL stuff, which, to be fair, I actually agree with, because it kind of halts, in theory, the amount of transferring that guys will do. So, like, that's why I think college basketball is in trouble right now, because you don't know who plays for who. Like, it's really difficult to build up some sort of rivalry. If
no doubt
all guys are, if it's a brand new team every single year, that's kind of why I think the Duke North Carolina thing has been long dead, because you don't have guys that have played against each other for 3-4 years the way that you did in years past.
They still have. I mean, I thought Hunter Dickinson actually did commit for 2 years to Kansas. I think it was like 2 years, $4 million or something like that.
He might have. I think his thing is though that should be.
But
for
you're
everyone.
Right. That's not the way it usually works, and there should be contracts. I totally agree with that.
I just don't know what the, you know, union and all that sort of stuff is. Speaking of NIL, Chris Jenkins, the hero for Villanova, is suing the NCAA for limiting his NIL opportunities while he was at Villanova. I think what he's looking to do, because NIL was not a thing when he hit that shot in the, was it 2016 or 17 Final Four, the championship game. He's trying to do what I think the college football players got, whereas they hit that lawsuit, and anyone that goes back to 2016 that was playing in college football is going to get some semblance of like a $2 billion payout. I think he's trying to start something like that for college basketball.
Well, so the NCAA did agree to pay like $2.8 billion to past and current athletes.
Did that, was that for everyone, or was that just for football players? I don't quite remember. Because if $2.8 billion is a lot of money, obviously, but when you spread that out across everybody, every athlete, over that time, it's not as, you know.
This is part of the whole thing that's going to lead to this, you know, thing out in the Bay Area where we're going to end up with an effective salary cap of like $20 to $21 million. You know, and then there's going to be more, I don't want to say, you know, governance or, you know, overseeing, but there's going to be some rules put to NIL, which is separate than the salary cap. That's what's going on this week, right? Isn't that happening this week? There's a story on it.
There is some sort of meeting that is going on, I think here actually, about the future of that. A lot of these teams are hiring general managers now. Now, some of it is like kind of silly. You're like, I don't. Andrew Luck to Stanford makes sense, but like Steph Curry is a general manager at Davidson. That feels like just a recruiting ploy more than anything. Hey, come talk to Steph Curry. You can come play here.
So this is the story, which actually is a yesterday story on ESPN.com. House settlement nears final, you know, amid judges' last concerns. A multi-billion dollar legal settlement with the potential to reshape the business of college sports inched closer to its fast approaching finish line during a federal court hearing on Monday. By the way, this federal court hearing, I think, was out in California, because this story emanates from Oakland, California. Judge Claudia Wilkin declined to provide final approval of a deal between the NCAA and plaintiff attorneys representing past, present, and future Division I athletes, but she directed lawyers to address a short list of her remaining concerns within 1 week. I think it's a good settlement, the judge said, wrapping up the 7-hour hearing. The NCAA has agreed to pay roughly $2.8 billion in damages to past and current athletes to settle three federal antitrust lawsuits that claim the association's rules have limited the athletes' earning potential in various ways. The deal, commonly referred to as the House settlement, after lead plaintiff Grant House, also would create a new system for schools to pay players directly starting this summer. In exchange, the NCAA will be allowed to limit how much each school can spend on its athletes per year, an effective salary cap that is expected to start at roughly $20.5 million per school and increase annually during the life during the 10-year lifespan of the deal. The deal also gives the industry's most powerful conferences an increased ability to police the name, image, and likeness deals, NIL, between athletes and boosters, which is intended to keep teams from using their boosters to circumvent the $20.5 million cap. So what we're going to have, assuming all this gets done and wrapped up, is that the Power Four schools, anyway, will have a $20.5 million salary cap to spend on its athletes, to actually pay them salaries. Now, we know from the conversations around the Maryland job over the last 2 to 3 weeks that the bulk of it, especially in the SEC and the Big Ten, and in the really in the Power Four, the football conferences, it's going to go to the football program. You know, roughly 60% of it's going to go to the football program. So $12 million to football. You know, something like $5 million to basketball. And then the remaining $3 million split up with all the, 27 other sports. You know, where you'll pick and choose. I would imagine that after men's basketball and football, women's basketball probably comes next. You know, Brenda Fries will get a couple of $1 million to spend on players. And then after that, it's going to be, not that much. Now, that's separate from NIL. So they're saying that they're giving conferences an increased ability to police NIL so that boosters don't circumvent the cap. I don't know how that will work. I know NIL is different than getting a salary. NIL should be for name, image, and likeness. If you're going to get money, it's for doing an ad for a product. Now, that's not what's been going on here over the last few years. They've essentially just been paying the players. Oh, by the way, show up for, an autograph session once a year. I still think there's plenty of opportunity for total shenanigans, around the NIL. But we're going to have a salary cap. This is what, in the Maryland situation over the last couple of weeks, this was part of the conversation. It's like, we need to be near the top and can't be in the bottom of what we get in terms of the percentage of the salary cap to pay players, or we're at a competitive disadvantage. Crazy. What else you have?
All right. Jalen Milroe invited and will attend the NFL draft.
Now, I saw that. Why? He's not going to be a first-round pick.
That is the question that most of us had. Generally speaking, the guys that go to the NFL draft are first-round picks because they don't want to sit in the green room for 2 days. It's kind of embarrassing. But Jalen Milroe is going to go, which means maybe someone has taken a liking to him that we are not aware of, and he could potentially go round number one, pull that little fifth-year option sort of deal. Late in the first round could be beneficial to Washington.
I just don't see Jalen Milroe as a first-round pick. He's unless somebody just sees him as more of a running Lamar Jackson. So Kuiper put out his latest 4.0 mock draft. It's two rounds. He's got Milroe, the second player picked in the second round by the New York Giants. He's got Tyler Shuck going to Cleveland with the first pick in the second round, and Milroe going to the Giants with the second round.
Yeah, he has Shador going to New Orleans, which has gained a lot of steam today.
What'd you say?
He has Shador to New Orleans pick on Kuiper's mock draft has gained quite a bit of steam today.
Shuttered in New Orleans. What number is that? 10?
9.
9. Well, that's a drop. You know that that is. I mean, who knows at this point? The big story coming up, you know, 2 weeks from Thursday night will be Shedeur Sanders, because there's no question that enough teams, more likely than not Tennessee at number one overall, have less concerns about Cam Ward. Cam Ward's clearly the number one quarterback in this draft. And then you've got two teams that pick after Tennessee, Cleveland and the Giants, who should both be interested in a quarterback. If they pass on Shedeur Sanders, then you get probably to would you say 9, New Orleans?
Yeah.
Yeah, and here's Kuiper's mock. He's got Shedeur going 9. I would not, by the way, describe that as a big fall or a slide, you know, where the cameras are fixed on Shedeur Sanders and it's an embarrassing night for him in primetime. If you go in the top 10, that's pretty damn good.
That's a pretty damn good spot, especially because they know certain teams aren't in the market for a quarterback.
Yeah. I guess you could consider the Raiders aren't going to consider a quarterback. They just paid Geno a bunch of money.
Geno, 2 years, $75 million. They're not drafting a quarterback in the first round like that.
I mean, are the Jets going to say, well, maybe Justin Fields is the answer? Maybe not.
And they give him 20 a year?
Here's the thing, Denton. What if he didn't get picked in the top 10 by New Orleans? Where's the next possibility?
Then you get that camera on him for a long, long time.
Where does he go? Because the next spot, though. Chicago, no. San Francisco, no. Dallas, no. Miami?
I don't know. I mean, we haven't gotten that Brock Purdy contract yet. You never know.
Well, I'm assuming the assumption is that that's going to happen.
What about Indianapolis? Just do a nice quarterback battle with Shedeur Sanders, Anthony Richardson, and Daniel Jones.
I would say that would be the next possibility.
No, there's no real options.
Atlanta, no. Arizona, probably no. Cincinnati, no. Seattle, at this point, no. Not after paying Sam Darnold. Tampa, no. Denver, no. Pittsburgh at 21. If he doesn't go to New Orleans at 9, he could fall all the way to 21.
Now I hope everybody understands why Denver traded up to get Bo Nix. Because this is why. They knew that this year the quarterback selection was going to be a tough one to build a franchise.
If Shedeur Sanders doesn't go until 21, it will be a rough night, but he's still a first-round pick. He's still the second quarterback pick. Does Mel have Jackson Dart going? No, he's got Jackson Dart going to L.A., the Rams, at 26. He's got Shamar Stewart, the edge rusher from Texas A&M, going to Washington at 29.
Love Shamar Stewart.
You know, the Shamar Stewart thing, like, I've seen him all over the place. I've seen him as high as, you know, close to top, you know, 12, and I've seen him at the very end of the round. The edge rushers in this draft, man, it is going to be wild because it's going to come down to kind of preference. You know, after Abdul Carter, like, it's just a matter of your preference, because there's a lot of players that seem basically in that 10 to 30 range, maybe 10 to 40 range. I like Mike Green. Of the guys that I've watched, the guy from Marshall, but I know he's got some baggage.
There is some
but
baggage,
I think his talent is legit game-changing. After that, you know.
I like both the A&M guys, Scorton or Shamar Stewart. I'd be happy with either of those two guys.
Yeah, Pierce Jr. they've got going to Philly at 32. Like, Philly needs another.
I mean, that just makes so much sense, though, because he also has this baggage of being uncoachable, so they put him with Philly, and they, yuck.
Yeah. All right, what else?
So Budweiser, I don't know if you saw this, Budweiser sent cans of beer to goalies in the NHL that played Alex Ovechkin and were not scored on. It's a special can. It reads Budweiser 0 of 895. I think that's actually pretty funny.
Is it zero calorie?
I would assume it's zero calorie, yeah.
How many goalies got it?
Quite a few, I would imagine. I mean, the guys played, you know, 20 years. I think they're more commemorative more than anything. Like, you get one. It's not like they're sending you a six-pack of the thing.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's a very beautifully designed can. I don't really drink Budweiser that much, but if Budweiser is your thing, you can maybe sip on it and then store the can. I just think it's a cool idea. I think it's funny.
I think Bud's always been a good beer, personally. I don't drink Bud now, but if that's all there is, I'm fine drinking Budweiser.
I'm not complaining. Trust me. You hand me a beer. If you hand me a Natty Light, I might complain.
28 goalies got this. There's 28 NHL goalies currently that Alex Ovechkin has never scored on. Led by Vitek Vanacek, Mike Condon, and Matthew Guerin. Or Guerin. I don't know. it's a good-looking can. Budweiser, 0 of 895. The greatest goal scorer of all time couldn't score on you. Anheuser-Busch.
That's pretty good. All right. I like it. I think it's a funny prop.
Each of them has the number of chances that Ovechkin had against him. So there's shots and goals. I wonder if that's total shots or total games against them. I don't know. All right.
Shots would be shots would make more sense. I think that's sick, though. I think that's a really cool idea.
Yeah. What else do you have?
All right, final thing here. I don't know if you're a fan of Crumble Cookie. We've never talked about that, but they are releasing 6 new flavors inspired by the Kardashians and the Jenners. I didn't know you could flavor plastic in 6 different ways, but they're doing their best. So each member of the family has their own specific flavor. So like Kris Jenner has classic yellow cake cookie. Kourtney Kardashian has flourless chocolate cake cookie. Kim has a snickerdoodle crumb cake cookie, which actually sounds like the best one. There's a cookies and cream skillet cookie, a cookie dough cupcake cookie, and a pink confetti sugar cookie, all of which are associated with one of that particular family member.
I'm actually, believe it or not, I'm not familiar with Crumble Cookie.
I've got to be honest. With respect to Crumble Cookie, you are not missing much. I don't think it's very good. I think if they're not warm, I prefer a warm cookie. Insomnia is a good one.
Is it it's a chain?
It's a chain, yeah. I don't know if they have one. I don't know that they have many in D.C.
Now that I see the logo, I think I've seen it before. But I've never had it before.
It doesn't look like they have a ton in the actual city.
Yeah.
Insomnia Cookie is in the city. And if you are given
Levain's all over the place now.
Yes, Levain is all over the place. That's way better. Insomnia is way better. Molten is way better. If you're getting a warm cookie, it's better than whatever the Crumble Cookie is. I think Crumble's fine. I think it's overhyped, though.
Okay. These flavors with respect to the Kardashians, I could not care less.
I just wanted to make the plastic joke, but I think that went over your head.
I didn't hear the joke.
Oh, I was going to say I didn't know they could flavor plastic 6 different ways.
Oh.
I'll get back to the drawing board on that.
Honestly, I couldn't. If you held a picture of the Kardashian girls, I could not identify one of them by name.
From the front or from the back? I could definitely identify all of them.
Really?
I'm too chronically online for this.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been they're like literally, if for someone like me that grew up in the era of social
media.
Kendall
the one that's really, she's the one, right?
She was the one that was in like a Pepsi commercial that didn't go well. Kim Kardashian was dating Reggie Bush for a while.
Yeah, of course, you know, of course I can identify Kim. Yes.
And then you have Kanye, which.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, don't Google him right now. One of them is dating another athlete. I don't know. Kourtney Kardashian's dating your guy Travis Barker, or married. I don't know.
Okay, that's enough.
That's our Kardashian segment for the year. Yeah. You're welcome.
I want to talk about Alex Ovechkin a little bit more, and where I think we can all agree that he's the greatest team sport athlete in the history of this town. But I want to go back to an email I got before the show that talked about legendary athletes in the history of this town. We're talking about team sport here. Team sport. Who's the all-time DC sports legend? Is it Ovi or is it somebody else? 301-230-0980, Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980 and the team980.com.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
So there's a difference between greatest player and the greatest legend. It is, I think, without debate that Alex Ovechkin's the greatest team sport player in the history of our city. If we take guys like Walter Johnson, Sammy Baugh, and Josh Gibson kind of out of the equation, we're talking about the last half century or so, you know, going back to maybe, you know, 1970, we'll put that on it. All right. So the last 55 years of more modern sports history, he's the greatest team sport player in our city's history. The player is, you know, a description that comes with it, the play and the accomplishments. You know, he's a three-time Hart Trophy winner. He's essentially a three-time MVP, the greatest goal scorer in the history of the sport. He's a top 10 player all time in the sport, probably higher after setting the mark the other day. You know, we've had three of our football players win MVP awards. Larry Brown in 72. Thank you, Kevin. Joe Theismann in 83 and Mark Mosley in 82 and Joe Theismann in 83. Bryce Harper won an MVP in 2015 in baseball. We do not have an NBA player that's won an MVP while the team's been in Washington. Wes Unseld won an MVP as a rookie when he won Rookie of the Year as well, but that was when the team was in Baltimore. There is no doubt that Alex Ovechkin has been, for the majority of his career, a no doubt top one, two, or three player in his sport during his career. You really can't say that about anybody else. This is not really even close. Whoever number two is, and I would say Daryl Green is number two, is a distant two. And then, you know, you can debate three and four because there's a lot of different possibilities. But legend is different. You know, I read this from Danny Z in Rockville at the beginning of the show. Danny Z wrote, "Kevin, you made a distinction between the greatest player and greatest legend. Ovi's the greatest player, and you said someone else is the greatest legend in DC history. I think Ovi is both. As Ben Standig told you yesterday, if someone had told you 20 years ago that a Russian teenager that plays hockey would be the city's greatest sports athlete of all time, you would have checked that person into a padded room. Yet, here we are. Legendary career." I'm not disputing that Alex Ovechkin isn't a legend. He is. He's had a legendary career. And again, greatest team sport player, no doubt. I personally, in looking at the difference between describing him as the greatest team sport player ever of the four major sports pro teams for the last, since 1970, versus, you know, legend, which is the definition that we would use, would be an extremely famous or notorious person, especially in a particular field, I think I would argue that Riggins is the most famous. The football team by far and away has the largest following. It's a mass following. We're not talking about tens of thousands or even in the hundreds of thousands. We're talking about in the millions. Not just here, but around the country where transplanted Washingtonians live. The football team, no matter how bad it's been, no matter what certain polls suggest, it's the team in our city that appeals to the most people, and it's really not close. Riggins was not only a great player, and you could argue Riggins on a Mount Rushmore of the greatest team sport players in the history of this town. I think his legend, his famousness, his celebrity around. By the way, his greatness as a player, specifically in one offseason, in one postseason, the 1982 postseason, and him taking the football during four playoff games, which included wins over Detroit, Minnesota, Dallas, and then Miami in the Super Bowl, winning the MVP of the Super Bowl, rushing for a record 612 yards over that span, made him a legend. And you could argue the most beloved player in the history of the most beloved team in the market. Sonny, by the way, is in that conversation. Daryl Green's in that conversation. Art Monk's in that conversation. But I would argue in terms of the greatest sports legend in the history of D.C., I think Riggins would be number one for me. Ovechkin in terms of the greatest team sports player. Riggo as the greatest team sports legend. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Let's get to the phone lines. First of all, if you want to debate the former, Ovechkin is the greatest team sports player in D.C. sports history, have at it. But I think that's a losing debate. I think the other is much more debatable. Denton, by the way, what are your answers?
So this is definitely a generational question. Obviously, I understand the greatness of John Riggins. NFL Network was on my television as a young man routinely. So I, America's Game, watched it all, but I never actually got to watch him in person. So because I'm of the younger variety, it is Ovechkin for me because I remember like the aura of Alex Ovechkin as a legend. You got to understand, us younger guys, we don't have the greatest crop of guys to choose from. Like, yeah, I mean, Jaden is up there, but he's only played 1 year. Robert only played 1 year at a high level that made everybody love him, and then we didn't like him very much after that. So there's really slim pickings when it comes to legends. Scherzer is in that conversation. You might find this a little funny, but I promise you, to my generation, it's not. John Wall is in that conversation, but that, like, for a guy that was born in 95, not getting to watch a lot of championship teams, it's definitely Alex Ovechkin for me.
I mean, you know, John Wall had an opportunity, you know, had he stayed healthy, but he just wasn't quite good enough.
He never got like
he
to
wasn't
that
quite charismatic enough. There wasn't, you know, the team would have had to do much better. I mean,
but my
Gilbert
generation
Arenas,
loves him.
I can't. They're just not in the conversation, and I'd love to try to push them into the conversation. You know, Elvin Hayes isn't in the conversation, even though I consider him to be the greatest bullet wizard of all time. I have him ahead of Wes, just barely. And by the way, that's a two-horse race. Okay, in terms of the greatest bullet wizard player, it's Hayes Unseld or Unseld Hayes. And you don't have anybody else in that conversation. I'm not talking about, you know, we're not going back to Baltimore players. All right, 301-230-0980. Who's the greatest sports legend in the history of this town? Let's go to Kevin in Clinton. Kevin, go ahead.
How you doing, Kevin Sam? First time calling to your show, man. I love you to death, man.
Thanks, Kev.
But you're right about Alex Ovechkin. He is probably the greatest sports player in the town. Then I give Daryl Green second, and Monk third, and John Riggins fourth. That's my assumption. But the greatest legend of all time, man. I can't believe I've listened to you for 2 days. I can't believe you have not said this man's name. It's Joe Gibbs, man.
Yeah, Joe but we're talking Gibbs. Players. We're talking players.
Of course. Players?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah, we're talking just players.
Okay.
Well, yeah, Gibbs would be right next to Ovechkin when you started the Mount Rushmore of all-time sports figures in the history of this town, no doubt.
Okay, I agree with you on that. But, yeah, I give it to Ovechkin, then Doug Green second. And I just want to say, you and Den have done a great job on this show, man. I listen to y'all every day. And, Kevin, I'm going to give you something, man. I hope I don't get in trouble and let the cat out of the bag. The mock draft that you're going to do, you better have the first game. Is Washington is going to play the Chargers in Brazil the first Friday night game after the Eagles.
Oh, my mock schedule. Yeah. Thanks, yeah. Kev. Actually, I think we've already had some news. I think we've already had some news on that. I think the Chiefs are going to play the Chargers in that Brazil game. I think Washington's going to play in Madrid. Stay on hold. Bones, Joe, Dennis, anybody else want to jump in? We've got a line open. Greatest sports legend in the history of D.C. The greatest sports athlete player is Ovechkin. Accomplishments, the awards are through the roof. Nobody touches him at this point. But what about legend? Greatest sports, team sports legend. And we're talking about player, and we're talking about really the last half century. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. You have some news about the show coming up right after 12 noon, between 12 and 12:15 probably. So stay tuned for that. But right now, phone lines, 301-230-0980. Who's the greatest sports legend in the history of this town? We're talking about team sports. We're talking about, you know, legend being the most famous, not the most accomplished. That's Ovechkin. Ovechkin is the greatest team sport player in the history of this town, period. Who's the greatest team sport legend? I say it's Riggo. I actually think that it's Riggins, and I can't come up with a close second. Honestly, not if we're talking about the parameters. Four major sports, last 50 or so years, only players. Let's go to Dennis and Frederick. Dennis, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
All right, Kevin, I'm sorry. I missed all the parameters, so I'll mention mine last. But because you're saying 50 years, that's where the problem I have with it. Jurgensen was a more famous and a better player than Riggins. He was phenomenal, and if you look up his records back then, he was far and away the best passer in the NFL in the 60s. Right. Yep. However, you've made it the past 50 years. Past 50 years, I think it's Ovechkin. I don't see how you can look at his highlight reel and compare Riggins to him. There's no comparison that he is.
Well, we're talking about legend. We're not talking about the accomplishments of the players.
I understand, but as a talent and as a legend over the last 50 years, and maybe it is biased because of recency, but he's so great, it's beyond belief. However, my best Washington greatest legend, without a doubt, was Walter Johnson. There's nobody close. 416 wins. 3,500 strikeouts that lasted for 50 years, 110 shutouts. He was my greatest, but he was a lot longer than 50 years ago, so you win that part of it.
No, to your point,
but I don't think he's a veteran.
Yeah, to your point, Dennis, I said yesterday that there's only one player, if we go back to, you know, all the way back to 100 years ago, there's only one player that rival Ovechkin's, you know, accomplishments, and it would be Walter Johnson. It wouldn't even be Sammy Baugh. It would be Walter Johnson, who still to this day is considered, if not the greatest pitcher in the history of the game, certainly in the top two or three. So, yeah, Ovechkin will not be a top two to three all-time player. Now, you know, Walter Johnson, you know, was just a pitcher, but still considered even to this day one of the top two or three pitchers in the history of the game. He would be the only player that's ever played in this city that could rival Ovechkin for greatness as a player. Thanks for the call. Bones, thanks for holding. Go ahead. Bones.
Hey, what's up, Kevin? What's up, Ben?
What's up, Bones?
Hey, you know,
go ahead, man.
You know, for me, the greatest athlete in this town, that's a legend, you know, that everybody love and dearly, and you know, it's John Riggins. And behind John Riggins, you got Doug Williams. And as far as for that basketball game last night, man, Houston didn't have no set plays, man. They were just dribbling back and forth, and that guy Sharp should have took the shot, you know what I'm saying, because he probably would have got fouled and went to the free throw line. That's all I've had to say. Man,
I agree. They got I thought Florida was much more organized in their half court sets, and ran more stuff than Houston did. Houston did run something there on that last possession, and it got Sharp open. He just didn't handle it well. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll take a few more of your calls. Then we've got some news related to the show. 301-230-0980. I've got Riggins as the greatest sports legend in the history of this town. Obviously, Ovechkin, the greatest team sport player ever in D.C. Kevin Sheehan, show the Team 980 and the Team980.com.